The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Stephen Ambrose brings you up to speed on what the future holds as he explores the latest technology as it impacts our lives.
Well, welcome to Tech Talk right here on Chai FM. And as usual, we've got an hour packed with lots of technology news, lots of gizmos, gadgets, and all the latest that's happening in the tech world. And it's a little overwhelming, I must tell you. Every time I sit down and start doing the research for these type for this, you know, show, it's a filtering exercise in the sheer quantity of stuff that's going on. Obviously, and we'll talk more about it again in my Tech Talk segment, AI is dominating on every single level, from employment to lifestyle to medical to you name it. And it's just getting faster and faster. And certainly the announcements come daily, if not minutely, to coin a silly phrase. But it is a crazy fast world we work in. Obviously, we're going to have new gadgets all the time. And Apple have been doing on a bit of a tear with the iPhone 17 coming out in September. And now all the new M5 gear coming out now, announced this week. Available sometime next week. I think even in South Africa should be available within a week or two. So many new things to talk about and so many new things happening. But just to focus on a couple of updates this week, which is quite interesting. It's starting to become quite a thing. A lot of the American, European, and other international tech companies have launched South African pricing, and some of them have been very, very good. In fact, some of the streaming services are cheaper in South Africa than anywhere else in the world. But the latest one to announce South African pricing is ChatGPT, and they are a little bit more expensive than the US pricing. But I think the reason for that is pretty much why the VAT that's being built in, because with RAND pricing comes VAT payments. And I think ChatGPT or OpenAI have now registered for VAT. And as a lot of South African companies have done, a lot of international companies have registered for South African VAT, it is becoming a little bit more expensive. Now, what's happened from the 15th of October, South African subscribers will pay about $3.99, not about, will pay exactly $3.99 per month for access to the ChatGPT Plus service. Now, that the Go service is free. Well, the free service comes with no guarantees, limited access to all sorts of advanced and latest generation AI. But from the Go service, which is new, coming in at 149 Rand, which is around about $4 in the US, which is a big difference, 149 Rand versus $4, which is 70 Rand. Big difference there. The Plus services are $3.99. That's the same as the $20 service in the US, which is basically 15%, call it the VAT. And the Pro service, which I'd highly recommend for only super rich people and businesses, because especially if you're into coding or video or some really serious AI-based work and stuff, starting at 3,999 Rand and 99 cents. Why they don't just stick to 4,000, probably mental barrier. But that's a $200 service in the US. And again, the difference is essentially 15%, which is tax. But the latest announcements, which we'll talk about later, are GPT-5 and Sora 2. So local pricing makes it a little bit cheaper. The one thing that it does save on, a lot of the banks now, if you subscribe to a $20 pricing thing, on an international service, they charge you a couple of rand to process that fee, the international fee, which I think is an absolute money-grabbing waste of time. It's ridiculous that you use your credit card, it transfers immediately, you're already paying, or the vendor's already paying a couple of percent in order to use that service, and now the banks in South Africa are all charging you a fee to make an international payment. So balance the one against the other. But the one thing about local pricing, it gives you certainty to exchange rates. You don't worry about the prices fluctuating every month. And generally, as I said, some of the guys are cheaper, but this one comes in for their base service a lot more expensive. And for the other services, pretty much the difference of the VAT. So take it from there. And interestingly, I've spoken a lot about it over the last little while, but DStv has been purchased by Canal Plus, a French video and television and communications super company. And they are starting to make the changes. They've replaced the financial director, they've replaced the CEO, and restructured much of the sort of management structure of the organization. And what they've announced this week is that they are looking to roll out a so-called super app that will feature all of the DStv and Canal Plus content, and potentially, let's see how they link them all together, third-party streaming services such as Apple TV Plus, well, it's just been renamed Apple TV, that's another story, and Netflix and HBO Max and other products that some are available in South Africa and some aren't. But it was a pretty complex restructuring. They spent a lot of money. They now own more than 90%. And it will bring, I think, a lot of changes. And I think my personal opinion is that the whole DStv offering has become a little cumbersome, a little messy. You probably work on the 90-10 rule. You, for 90% of the programs, you never touch them, and 10% you watch on a regular basis. And yet the bundle has become increasingly more expensive every single month, into the thousands for the top, you know, the top element of it. So it's getting more and more expensive, but it certainly is also getting a little bit messy. You get Showmax, you get DStv Stream, you got Canal Plus now streaming service. And I think it actually makes a lot of sense to bring them all together into some form of Canal Plus or whatever you want to call it. Who knows what the actual construct will be, but all of them, including Showmax, are going to probably make sense to bundle into one service with some discounts to buying them all. That's pretty much how Disney went with their Hulu and other services in the US. But also what's happened in the US, all these streaming services have become progressively and really significantly more expensive. So I'm not sure where the future of streaming is going, but certainly in South Africa, the broadcast, the television, or the satellite broadcast of television, which is still pretty big, not massive. Well, it's massive in terms of numbers, but hasn't been growing massively over the last few years in South Africa, and certainly not in the rest of Africa as streaming starts becoming more and more relevant. But all of that is fundamentally shifting the entertainment industry. I know when you watch something with adverts, it seems pretty jarring after watching Netflix and other streaming services, which just don't have adverts. And suddenly you get this interruption every couple of minutes. And you can't, and if you pause it, you can't even get rid of the adverts, which is a bit irritating. So watch these spaces. And also, let's see if some streaming service like HBO Max and Paramount Plus will come through on Canal Plus, because they've got some, a lot of that content comes through on DStv. But I think that whole thing will shift in a very, very interesting way, because Canal Plus have deals that are completely separate to what DStv does. And why duplicate all this stuff on a global platform such as DStv and Canal Plus? So watch the space. I don't see much savings in terms of money, because, as I said, I think the streaming services are getting significantly more. But I do see a much more streamlined service, pretty much like the Apple TV service, where you've got lots of everything coming into one interface. You can choose between them. It keeps track of what you watch. And it just becomes a little bit easier to watch what you like to watch and not have to keep flipping between different apps and different things to see what's going on. They all seamlessly land up in one super app. And then everything's in one place, theoretically, for one slightly lower price. But let's see how that all pans out. But change, as they say, is the only thing that's absolutely guaranteed, and it's definitely coming. And one last quick story about what's happening in, you know, in the tech world. And on the consumer side, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscribers have started to feel the pinch with a 34% price hike to 268 Rand a month. Now, if you're a big Xbox gamer, over the years, it's always been fairly reasonable, and it's been pretty much based on the dollar pricing, which is a little volatile. But at 268 per month, it is sparking a few debates on value. on transparency from Microsoft. And I think you need to just look at all these costs, because the amount of money that you're spending on streaming and playing and gaming and whatnot online is starting to climb to become pretty significant. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and I will be straight back after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. And again, I know I've been on about so many different things in the AI space, but AI has fundamentally shifted absolutely everything that we do. And what I'd like to do today is just do a quick sort of wrap up of some of the latest and greatest and newest developments in this space, because so much is changing so fast. And I think that we start to lose track of what's going on in the AI space. And in many cases, there is a lot of hype and all sorts of fear and problems around it. Now, one of the biggest challenges is the next generation of, or not challenges, but one of the biggest things is the next generation AI models and some of the breakthroughs that these are bringing. And this, without question, is one of the most transformative topics in tech. It is changing absolutely every aspect of every single major software platform that's being used by all of us. Windows fundamentally is morphing into a full AI-based operating system. Apple are touting their Apple Intelligence AI platforms more and more in their latest releases of their software. And they are starting to embed themselves at a fairly fundamental level and change so many things and bring together so many things that used to be standalone apps. And I mean, that process has played out over the years. When Windows isn't operating, and I mean, just to digress and shoot back in time, when Windows as an operating system was first brought out, it was bare bones. It simply gave you a graphic user interface, which was operated with this revolutionary thing called a mouse. And what you saw, and everyone was talking about WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get. So it was on the screen. You could move stuff around. You could run different programs. There was this thing called multitasking, which built on everything that happened before, because that was the DOS era. You had to load up Lotus 1-2-3. Oh, heavens, I'm absolutely dating myself here. But essentially, there was a spreadsheet program called Lotus. You had to load it up, use it, save what you were doing, close it, then open up WordPress. Again, a word processing program that predates everything that we have today. And it was a very clunky, clumsy exercise. Microsoft with Office, with Windows, brought in the era of having two things open at the same time. It also allowed you to share data between the two things. And it certainly got slicker and smoother and faster and higher resolution and greater capability. And came Office and so many other programs. But so many little things that we needed to be done were revolutionary little programs that people wrote, that came up with, and all of these things sort of moved ahead and built into the operating systems that as recently as 2020, 2021, we were really comfortable with using, copying and pasting data, linking programs, and doing all sorts of stuff, and running accounting, running all sorts of stuff in the background. Well, the advent of the AI platforms and the large language models, which they originally started simply to give you tons of information based on tons of information that's stored within these algorithmic-based language models, suddenly there was now starting to be a massive link between all the stuff you were doing on your computer, and with the advent of pretty much broadband everywhere, wherever you went, mobile, fixed, you name it, massive amounts of stored data in databases around the world. And AI became that fabric, that web, that connector of all of these various data stores for the first place, and the operating of many systems secondly. So tons of data that was stored by tons of people in very discrete places suddenly started being interrogated, restored, relinked, in a way that completely and utterly transformed transformed the web. And where we are today, even when you do a Google search, the first thing that pops up is a little analysis from AI trying to interpret exactly what you're asking. And the more complicated or the more thorough, the more specific, the more, sometimes even the more broad your query is, not just looking for keywords, you know, restaurants near me, but you spend a little bit of time and you say that I really like fresh food, blah, 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 and go on to a whole story, it will get a much better result. That is the first thing you see in pretty much anything. And the vast majority of people that I speak to today don't do standard web searches anymore because, one, a web search just gives you a list of things to look at. And then you've got to go one by one by one by one. And those are ranked by who knows what sort of algorithm. Again, based on some of your information, but other times pretty random. And you don't actually have any context or any real understanding of what you're looking for. And even if you do, it's a laborious, long-winded process to gather all the information that the AI does in a couple of seconds. Now, again, we're now sitting waiting for the computers. They're taking 45, 50, 90 seconds to come up with really complex queries and information. But the information is always pretty on point. You really can't argue with some of the facts. There is a little bit of trouble in the background, a little bit of daydreaming and you name it, and it makes stuff up. But for the most part, if it's a factual type thing, you're looking for comparisons, you're looking for information, you're looking for it to do some basic programming, AI is just doing the most ridiculous job. And what is happening in that space is that in many cases, because programs that you used to do, accounting programs, programming programs, platforms that operate and run businesses, security, you name it, all those programs are using these massive AI capabilities to clean up, simplify, and to make life a lot easier for the user with their end goal in sight. So if you want the slickest accounting system, use AI to simply suck in all the information, put it into the right place, analyze it, and post it in the correct manner. You don't need to waste any time allocating and doing all sorts of stuff. Speaking as an accountant, that certainly changed my life. But as a programmer, instead of sitting and building everything up from code in a silly little box, you can put what you want into an LLM that's optimized for coding, and it'll pop out a very thorough, maybe not perfect, program that you can do the various things that you need to do with. And with a little bit of cleanup and some knowledge of coding and understanding what you're looking for, or perhaps rerunning those queries and tightening up, you can get to within 90% of what took you days in a couple of minutes. So those things change everything that we do. There's a definite dark side to that because entry-level jobs in the coding and that sort of space are changing. I don't say they're going away, and a lot of people moan and groan about that, but they're not going away. They're morphing and they're changing because without understanding what the LLM is doing, you can't refine it to the point where it's usable. In many cases and for many years to come, I don't believe they'll be able to autonomously create stuff with absolutely no human interaction. But we're definitely reaching the point where human interaction is definitely managing what the AI does and understanding and refining rather than creating. So a lot has changed there. But let's start with some of the big players in this space. And OpenAI, one of the big players. They launched it, many followed, but they certainly do hold the place as being the iconic AI people. And OpenAI's ChatGPT was the one that most of us played with in the beginning. They've launched GPT-5. Now, that was a bit of a rocky launch. I think they rushed it out of the gate to beat Grok and others because it's definitely a little bit of a war out there to see who's first and who's got the most capabilities and who's got the fastest AI and which one can handle the most queries and process the most amount of information. But they seem to have got over some of their teething problems, and they certainly have some incredible capabilities in the latest version, which is GPT-5. And as I mentioned earlier, you can now pay for that in South Africa in rands. And again, they've kept their really high-level stuff for the most expensive and most powerful, you know, the most powerful experience is for those that pay the most, which is a typical model and nothing wrong with that. But their entry level and even base level GPT-5 type products are extremely good. It handles text, images, audio, and video all now in one seamless package. There used to be a couple of other programs that did it using them. They've brought it all into one and it does everything. So you can take a photo of a recipe ingredient, and if you don't recognize them, the AI will not only identify it, but suggest substitution. It gives you cooking instructions in your preferred language anywhere in the world, and even can generate a short video tutorial, all from one prompt. It's pretty crazy. It's absolutely like having a personal assistant that thinks like a human, but processes information at ridiculous speeds. And that, again, is the whole point. And another, just to give you some context, GPT-5 is not alone. Gemini's Google, with their Gemini Pro 2.5, is really pushing the boundaries as well with, I think, some of the most enhanced reasoning capabilities. And this is perfect for all sorts of complex tasks like planning your budgets, analyzing data trends without even needing spreadsheets. You can put in your bank account. Sometimes be careful what you do, but you can put in documents, any amount of documents. I know people that have done that to get legal information. They upload a whole lot of responses from various people and tell the LLM to think like a lawyer and to give you advice. Now, the same thing has happening for medicine. The same thing's happening for business processes. As always, big warning, these are computer programs. They are not doctors. They do not replace them. They are not lawyers. They do not replace them either. But what it does do, it gives you a framework to inform you, to allow you to have insight into things that you may know very little about. And the danger of knowing little about too many things, or a lot of little instead of a lot of information about one topic, which experts and doctors and lawyers and accountants are. It does, however, give you the baseline information to understand what these guys are saying to you down the road. So I've always found that OpenAI ChatGPT is very good for certain things. It does have a little bit of creative thinking going on. But Google's Gemini is pretty insane for analyzing data trends and other sorts of that type of stuff. There's also Anthropic's Claude Sonnet 4.5, which also has its own specifications and its own things that are really good at. It excels in creative writing and ethical decision making. Obviously, that's based on all the information that has been used. But if you want to write amazing things or do a lot of stuff in the sort of more creative fields, I found that Claude Sonnet is amazing, really good. And a lot of them, you know, you find that often you put the same query into all the different ChatGPTs, even the free versions or the various AIs, and you get very, very different flavors. My personal, without any sort of bias, the one that I've been using the most, and the slightly paid, and the not the full paid version, but the medium paid version, is the X's Grok one. And I find it's a little snarky, a little bit more human than the others, and more thorough. When you do a query, it gives you images, it gives you links, it gives you all the information that you need. So it's not to say they're all identical. And that's what's so cool about these LLMs and all these OpenAI or all these AI platforms. Each one is slightly better or slightly different, just like people, interestingly. Each one has their own strength and their own weaknesses. And sometimes, depending on what you do, this is something that you need to be very careful about. And it does not replace true human creativity or understanding, but it certainly gets rid of human drudge work, the amount of time it takes you to get anywhere. So even if you're an experienced writer and you need to do some research to write a technical document on a particular topic, if you use, for example, Claude Sonnet, which I find exceptional in terms of prose and understanding that, and giving you a much more nuanced view of stuff, it really does help you to brainstorm ideas for stories, business plans, and even to clarify some ethical dilemmas in the stuff that you do. And again, often a sounding board, just a friend or someone you can talk to about things is always useful. Well, here's a friend online which pretends to be human. I've had people start calling, you know, ChatGPT he or she, which is a bit scary. But still, these type of things definitely add a lot of value. And one, just something that I really looked at, one of the breakthroughs, and still I think the biggest breakthrough in AI is in medicine. So in any form of imaging, and echocardiography is one of them, there are massive benefits with AI-powered tools in that space. And again, it does not get rid of the need of an expert doctor to look at things and analyze things. But what it does do, it does give you an absolutely flawless analysis. And when I say flawless, not entirely, might miss certain things that it does not know about, but certainly just on the sheer scale and speed of any image that it analyzes, so heart scans, much more accurately and far quicker, and presents that information to a professional in a way that it is unbelievably difficult to miss subtle issues and other little things. And then what it can also do, instead of the doctor having to spend hours trying to find what's happening, because around the world, so much changes on a daily basis. There are new processes, new procedures, new technologies, new ways of dealing with stuff. All of that can be presented in a very succinct and comprehensive manner for the doctor to sift through and come up with much better outcomes. And it's really not sci-fi. It's a bit like the little gadget that they use in Star Trek to scan you and to fix you. It's very much moving down that way to give an enormous amount of complex information with a ton of variables in a very succinct and easy to consume and easy to understand way. And all of that is happening at scale and at speed that is pretty much ridiculous. It's transforming patient care, it's transforming security, it's transforming every aspect of everything that we do. And on that note, I could go on for a while, but on that note, the AI tells me that it's actually a human who tells me, but we have a break for our sponsors, and I'll be back with all the greatest and latest new stuff from Apple. And we'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. And before we get stuck into all the new toys from Apple, moving on to the gadget of the week. Not one I've been playing with, though I've just got the new iPhone 17 Pro. And I will talk more about it once I've had time to really get stuck into what's going on. It's still an iPhone, not huge changes there, but there's a lot coming. But Apple have been on a tear. September, the whole iPhone 17 launch with faster, smoother, better phones as usual. And there are definitely some massive upgrades in terms of speed, battery life. And there's hopefully more and more capability on AI and the latest versions of the OS, iOS 26.1, which is slim beta, but I've been playing with it for a bit, certainly does bring AI more fully into the integration of the various aspects of the operating system. And as I mentioned earlier, AI, more than anything, apart from some of the things that it does, is definitely becoming the glue that is holding together the way that things work. So phones are becoming more and more integrated. There's no question for me that Samsung with Google are leading the charge here. AI is fundamentally and carefully built into everything that they do. And it's showing in photographs, it's showing in voice, it's showing in so many things that I think Apple have slipped a little behind in. That being said, they were never the first on the bleeding edge of technology, but they certainly can do a great job at making it easy for all of us to use and certainly integrate it in a way that makes a lot of sense. So obviously the redesigned front camera is really great. It keeps you centered during video calls. Certainly when you are walking around or doing something, it follows you. It's pretty cool. And that uses AI. And the main cameras at the back have definitely improved tremendously. And the new iPhone Air is super slim. I've played with it. Haven't really spent a lot of time with it, but the slimness is pretty interesting. And it's very, it's an iPhone, but it's super slim, super light, and really very, very pleasant to use. But what was launched this week was the new M5 chip. Well, the M5 chip has been announced and has been out for a while. But understanding what the M5 chip does, Apple control now the entire ecosystem. They manufacture their own processors, and the M5 or the M range from the M1 to the M5 has pretty much rewritten the rules of CPUs and GPUs for the most part. The only other players in the space was obviously Intel, but in the mobile space was certainly only Qualcomm and Samsung and those guys who played on a very similar structure. But Apple started, as usual, to do their own thing. And the M5 offers four times the peak graphics performance compared to the M4. And the M4 is still insanely powerful compared to pretty much anything else going on. And it also features what they call the next generation GPU with neural accelerators in every core. So what they've done is they've added AI processing cores or features into every single multi-core part of the M5. Obviously, a much more powerful CPU, much faster neural engine, which is their AI part of the whole thing. And they've increased the memory bandwidth, because the one thing that I think I've mentioned, but it's always worth mentioning again, is that AI is very different in terms of memory usage and data transfer than anything that's come before. In the past, it was very much linear. You asked for something, it was sent to you. And so the down was more important than the up in wherever it was, be it on the internet and anywhere else. But the real truth is that memory bandwidth, because of AI, because of the amount of speed and two-way conversation that's going on, memory bandwidth becomes a massively important part of the whole thing. So now what Apple have done using this new chip, which definitely brings, I think, some pretty insane specs just in and of itself, is a brand new 14-inch MacBook Pro with the M5 chip. It delivers up to 3.5 times more performance on AI tasks compared to previous generations, with much faster storage speeds and up to 24 hours of battery life. Now, on a laptop, I mean, that doesn't, you know, most people sit with a laptop on a desk and they plug it in, but 24 hours of battery life is pretty insane. And again, that's part of the M5 chip evolution. It is faster, more powerful, and because of the way it works and the way it's designed, it's more careful with its use of power. So it becomes really a lot more integrated in terms of everything. And the growth, or rather the combination of putting the video processing and the CPU all in one, managing them all with AI processors, allows images and AI features and voice transcription to happen at a speed and at a pace that pretty much nothing has come close. The latest version of Mac OS, Tahoe, also offers, because of the AI, and takes full use the full capability of the chip to make search faster, automation tools faster, and certainly increases the integration with other Apple devices. So my experience with this type of thing is that for most people, they won't even notice a hell of a difference between the M4 and the M5 right now. But what you will find is that as these devices get older, in the next 2 to 3 years, you'll find that the more powerful, the latest devices will last longer, will continue to perform in a much more powerful manner than the older ones. So I wouldn't rush out to change an M4 MacBook Pro for an M5. But if you're in and you've got an M1 or an M2 or even one of the older Intel MacBook Pros, the M5 is an incredibly powerful upgrade to all of that. They've also included the M5 in the new iPad Pro. It looks pretty much the same, but it definitely brings a massive boost to the AI capabilities, pretty much as we described in the MacBook Pro. And it definitely gives you a lot more power and a lot more usage. And with the new the iPad OS, it becomes more and more of a computer than it's ever been. with the Apple Pencil, certainly becomes a creative tool. And on that note, sorry, time flies when you're talking new toys. We have a quick break for our sponsor, and I'll be back with a wrap-up of the new products and one or two hints and tips before we call it a day. So we'll be back straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. Now, I've only got a few minutes to wrap up, but again, the new iPad Pros, the M5 compared to the M4, are definitely faster, better, more useful for creative work. And the displays themselves haven't changed much. The Apple Pencil support has pretty much stayed the same. But it is, without question, brought right up to date with the M5. And I haven't played with one yet because they only come out next week. But I would imagine that they're lightning fast and super easy to use. They've also updated the Apple Vision Pro. That was a real niche product. A lot of people moaned about the weight and the size and definitely the price. But their Apple Vision Pro vision has evolved. It certainly, I've tried it a few times and it's pretty impressive. Imagine sitting on a plane watching a massive movie in high definition or anywhere, even in your living room. And the M5 brings, along with the new communication chips, which is another thing, it's another element of the whole thing, with the latest versions of Wi-Fi 7 and everything else that goes with it, they've definitely updated it enormously, and it's got a new headset, a new band, which apparently balances the weight, removes it from your face a little bit. So it's got improved connectivity, and it definitely will bring bring that device right up to date. More to come. Apparently, they're bringing out some new HomePods and some new Apple TVs in the next little while. But all these gadgets work seamlessly together. Your iPhone talks to the Mac, which syncs with your iPad. So figure out how this all works. And I mean, the Apple ecosystem has always been incredibly easy to use, not taking anything away from the Samsung or Android ecosystem that so many other manufacturers are offering. But the breadth, the speed, and the sheer comprehensive quality, never mind the price, of Apple is a little bit hard to beat. And before we end for the day, just a couple of little hints and tips, a few wrap-ups that I think you absolutely need to keep in mind. All this online usage, all this time you're spending on AI, using your phone, using your computer, logging onto various apps, as much as they're all coming together, I would definitely recommend that you enable two-factor authentication on all your accounts all the time. The amount of people are having their Facebook accounts hacked, WhatsApp accounts hacked, and all the various social medias that you're playing with. When you put two-factor authentication, it's not an absolute guarantee because there are some spoofing and spamming and phishing things that can somehow get through to all these various systems. But the real bottom line is when you put two-factor authentication, in other words, you get an SMS or you have to allow your system to use another device or another phone to verify any login, it's an absolute second lock on your digital door. So definitely use it. Use a password manager to generate strong, unique passwords, and don't use the same password for everything. That is the absolute worst thing you can do. I know it's crazy. You've got 100 different places you go online, but to use the same password is just asking for trouble. So on that note, I'm afraid we have to call it a day. More to come, lots more stuff coming over the next couple of weeks. And we'll be right here on High FM Talking Tech every Thursday, 11 to 12. This is Stephen Ambrose for Tech Talk right here on High FM.